Fatherless Fanny by Anonymous. Chapter 11. A Hoax. The Duke of Albemarle, for it was really he, offered his carriage to convey Fanny home. But Amelia replied that as Miss Stanhope's own carriage would be there immediately, there was no occasion to intrude upon his politeness. A groom had been sent in search of the coach, which had conveyed the ladies as far as the Edgware Road, and it was but a very little while before it made its appearance. The Duke instantly recognized the arms, and became the dupe of Miss Stanhope's artifice, by mistaking Fanny for his bride-elect, a hoax Amelia had determined upon playing him as soon as she had found herself unknown to him. The Duke assisted Fanny to the carriage, and then took his leave, without taking any notice of the discovery he thought he had made, and proceeded to town, full of the most pleasing anticipations of happiness in his approaching union with a girl of such exquisite beauty as the one he had just been admiring. He retained but a very slight recollection of the infantile grace that had been presented to him as his future wife before he left England, and could only remember that he thought her a pretty girl, although there was certainly nothing in her appearance that promised such a full harvest of perfection as that he had just been contemplating. Lord Summertown's house was to be the Duke's town residence, until he should be able to fix upon one to his mind, and he alighted there in the highest spirits imaginable in about half an hour after he had parted with Fanny. When the Duke related the accident that had brought him acquainted with Miss Stanhope, Lord Summertown was still better pleased, as the description he gave of the impression her beauty had made upon his fancy was in the true style of a lover.
"When I saw the lovely creature thrown from her horse," said his Grace, "terror was the instinctive emotion of my heart. But little did I imagine how deeply my own happiness was concerned in her safety. Thank heaven," added he, "the sweet girl, though greatly frightened, was not hurt."
"Well, well, boy," answered Lord Summertown, "I am glad it is as it is, for it would have been an inconvenient thing if the girl had been killed before you had married her. Her fortune is very necessary to the repair of yours, as that long chancery suit with the pretended heir to your title cost an immensity of money. I am glad you like the doll so well, too, as that will make the matrimonial pill go down easier. For my part, I think all the girls of fashion are exactly alike nowadays. They all resemble walking sticks in their shapes and French puppets in their faces. Their dress consists of exactly enough of drapery to attract one's eyes, whilst it is sufficiently scanty and transparent to shock one's modesty. And there is so much unmeaning frippery in their conversation, and so little delicacy or good sense in their conduct, that I am convinced that the man who marries for love in these days must be either a boy or a dotard.
Your lordship's picture of female excellence is not very inviting," said the Duke.
"Female excellence," rejoined Lord Summertown. "Why, there is no such thing. But, however, I do not wish to set you against the potion you are obliged to swallow. You will find out its bitterness time enough. Apropos, who was with Miss Stanhope in her unlucky excursion this morning?"
"A lady and a gentleman," replied the Duke.
"The lady, I dare say I can guess at, for she has picked up an adventuress who is making a good thing out of her. And I hope the first act of your power, when you marry Miss Stanhope, will be to break that connection. I hope the gentleman was not a rival, though. Girls are such vain creatures that they cannot live without an admirer, and I have begun to be afraid, for some time past, that you would stay so long abroad that some needy fellow would snatch up the prize before you returned.
I heard the young lady, who was with Miss Stanhope, call the gentleman Colonel Ross," said the Duke.
"Oh, then all is well," rejoined Lord Summertown. "Colonel Ross is married, so there are no fears from that quarter."
"I am glad to hear it," said the Duke, for there was so much anxiety painted on his countenance that I could almost have ventured to believe that he was an admirer of the lady who had met the accident. "But, my dear uncle, you talk of Miss Stanhope's marrying some needy man, as if her fortune was at her own disposal. I thought her father's will insisted upon her marrying me, on the penalty of losing the bulk of her fortune, and that I was bound by a similar injunction to marry none but Amelia."
"A mere fairy tale invented by my ingenuity," rejoined Lord Summertown, "to make you both cement the union I have set my heart upon. As you have fallen in love with the girl, I may venture to disclose the secret to you, but I beg you will guard it carefully from Amelia, on whose docility we must not rely a single instant after that restraint is taken off."
"Deceive her no longer, I entreat you," said the Duke. "To be the object of Miss Stanhope's unrestrained choice would make me happier than I can express. And how can I ever know that I am so, while she acts under the influence of the supposed clause in her father's will?"
"I did not imagine you were such an idiot, Henry," exclaimed Lord Summertown angrily. "You talk of things that never existed. No woman ever had an unbiased choice in a husband. They are influenced by vanity, avarice, or ambition, and sometimes by all three. When you know as much of the sex as I do, you will despise them as completely as I do. There is no animal so perverse as a headstrong girl. Trust not your happiness to her keeping, therefore. I will find a method of revenging the affront." "You ought to know me, Henry," continued Lord Summertown, looking sternly at the Duke. "I have done much to be revenged of those who scorned my power, and you have benefited from it. Take care, therefore, how you incur my displeasure. No one ever yet did so with impunity. You know the ties of blood are nothing in my estimation when exposed to excited vengeance. Remember that, and tremble. I leave your mode of acting to yourself, after this caution."
The Duke shuddered as he listened to this exordium, for he well understood his uncle's allusion, and he would gladly have given his title and estate to be freed from the unpleasant sensations which the recollections it awakened excited in his bosom. He knew, however, the vindictive temper of Lord Summertown too well to hazard the slightest contradiction.
"Where my duty and my inclination go hand in hand," said his Grace, "there is little fear of my disobeying your lordship's injunctions. To marry Miss Stanhope is the most ardent wish of my heart. That I should do so is your lordship's. I shall not, therefore, risk the possibility of a disappointment by divulging the important secret."
End of chapter 11.